Here I is, boys and girls, back in the bunker after a long weekend. Yeah, I didn't ship anything out on the weekend, you probably noticed. I just sort of took it easy this weekend and watched the flowers grow. Hey, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. That's where you send your life savings and your retirement money to, and we'll put it to good use. Yeah, and also you can send us snail mail there, and you can send us, you figure out what the hell you want to send. Just send whatever you want to send. Let's get on with the show. Hey, it is August the 22nd, 2016, so this month is almost over, man. If you got something naughty, nasty, and you want to do, and you want to come down here and get one of our weapons of mass destruction and go on a rampage, well, you've got to get it done pretty quick. You know, that's right behind our Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern Steakhouse and Filling Station. That's where we have our weapons of mass destruction used equipment yard. Only the big stuff, none of that small stuff. We don't even sell Jeeps or those little things they run around in. Only the big track type stuff, yeah. Because that's all my Chinese buddies are willing to bring back to me from the Middle East on their Chinese junks. Because those junks, you know, they can make it up the Mississippi, then they can make it up Ohio, and then they can get up into the Wabash River and can bring it right down here by my house. How about that? They can't get up my creek. They're a little bit too big for my creek. Like I told you before, we're expecting a shipment of used drones in here. Only used once. Only used once against wedding parties. Yeah. Well, they did use it more than one wedding party. They used them on a couple of hospitals and a couple of schools, yeah, so, and then they put them in mothballs and ship them out. They got to get rid of the evidence, you know, of mass killing of kids and women and children and grandpa and grandma, and oh boy, it's too much. Of course, that's all for the protection of you people here in the United States, right? If they didn't do that, they'd all be over here. Yeah, right. I hear they got a motto, you know, they kill them before they're 16 and you'll be all right. Of course, I don't know. It was a 12 to 14-year-old that's strapping on the bombs over there and walking in and killing 50 people. They do it by remote control. They strap them on the kid, and then they push the button, and the adult's safe. He's way back from it, and he pushes the button. Really brave guys. Really brave warriors. Well, you may have noticed the weekend was full of this Republican-Democrat demo crazy struggle going on. That's all it is. Not even right-wing, left-wing anymore. Just Democrat versus Republican and back and forth. And the Trumpites went tramping down to New Orleans or down to Louisiana to inspect the damage. Shit. Everybody claims these are not photo opportunities. And they give Obama hell because he didn't quit that game right now and run down there to Louisiana. Come on. Come on, will you? This is childish. Childish. Those people, white people in Louisiana, are going to take care of themselves. They don't, before any of these politicians can get up enough steam to get around there. And, you know, too, a lot of people shipping stuff down to those people that's, you know, out of their closet and stuff and old shoes and everything like that. Probably, if you're going to send anything to Louisiana, you got to send it newly packaged, you know, especially things, you know, like diapers and things like that. But the one problem you got, white boy, white lone wolf, what, a third or more of the state is black. So you're rustling around and spend your money on stuff and you send it down there to a whole lot of black people. Of course, everybody's saying, all race don't count no more. They're all, you know, we're all one when it comes to an emergency. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, a week after it's over, you'll find out. It all boils down to survival of the fittest, boys and girls. Survival of the fittest. Don't forget that. They say they got the Louisiana Navy down there where everybody gets their rowboat, goes out and starts grabbing people and picking them up in the boats. Wonder how many people in this population are obese, overly, morbidly obese. And they're sitting on the front porch waiting to be picked up. I don't know whether I would pick up morbidly obese people. Sorry, I know you, Tom, you terrible Tommy, you're really mean, you're a bad guy. Well, I don't know, I believe in survival of the fittest, and fit white people are going to survive, because they not only are fit physically, but they got a brain to go out of your way, saving the Untermenschen, I think is it's a mistake. Of course, there's a natural inclination to save people. I know that. It's something that's sort of been bred into us by the Jesus people. Yeah. We got to save everybody. Well, I don't know. We got the same problem with the world. We got to save the world because there's these kind of catastrophes going on all over the world, and there's a way of keeping the population down. Yes, Mother Nature, that's her plan. There's going to always be natural problems around the world, and there was a time when we let nature take its course, as you've heard that statement before, and tended to keep the population and the unfit under control. But no more. You got to send billions of dollars out to them and send a shiploads of food and everything else, and most of all send out medical assistance and all that. Well, I'm afraid I'm a little more hard-hearted than that. It's hard to be hard-hearted, but like the guy says, I have no master but logic. And if logic bothers people and they don't like it, they say, you're a bad man. Well, that's just tough shit. Well, I spent quite a bit of my weekend watching lectures by Richard Dawkins, the world's leading person to poo-poo the Jesus myth and all that kind of stuff. You should listen to Richard Dawkins. He's got a RichardDawkinsInstitute.net, I believe it is. And more and more people should listen to what he's talking about here. And of course, there's a lot of good physicists talk on there, too, about space and all that kind of stuff. So it's a relief from all this penny-ante crap that you get on the regular radio and TV. Well, I see the Trump, the Donald, isn't relying on faith alone. The Republican candidate brings on board a new religious outreach director. Reaching out there, man. Former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin once said that God, not people, elect the U.S. presidents. That's a new one. But as Palin's former spokeswoman, Pam Pryor, knows, sometimes God needs a little help. That's why the Trump campaign announced today it's hired Pryor to lead its faith and Christian outreach effort. According to Trump aide Alan Cobb, she will oversee communication, social media, events, and other efforts aimed at attracting religious voters. Pryor's resume includes positions with many conservative and Christian heavy hitters, but with Trump, she has her work cut out for her. Well, that's probably because I don't think he's even a Christian, but anyhow. Typically, a religious outreach director for the Republican presidential nominee has a fairly easy job. In past elections, evangelical Protestants and the Mormons have been shoo-in. Conservative Catholics have often supported Republican candidates, as have some of their more progressive counterparts. All that staffer had to do is host a few events and slip some religiously coded language into the candidate's speeches, and the job was done. But Trump is turning out to be a little more complicated nominee when it comes to religious voters. Trump currently has more support from white evangelicals than Mitt Romney did 4 years ago. But some conservative Christian leaders vocally oppose him and are encouraging their constituents to follow suit and, I guess, vote for Hillary. I don't know. He has less support from Catholic voters and Mormons than Romney did in 2012. And his struggles with the latter group means that even, what the hell, I lost, then even Utah may now be in play. Whoa. That is terrible. Terrible, that's terrible. Trump hasn't exactly helped matters with his religious blunders on the campaign trail. Placing money in a church communion plate, being unable to cite his favorite Bible verse, the devil's book, admitting he's never asked God for forgiveness. Well, I commend him for that. How can you? If he doesn't exist. And committing his now infamous 2 Corinthians gaffe. It didn't help that he picked a fight with the Pope either. Oh, I'd love to pick a fight with the Pope, if anybody would listen to me. Someone in the Trump camp must be paying attention to these struggles. Pryor appears to be an effort to fix the problems, to make these Jesus people happy. Along with several other recent hires, in what has been called a campaign shakeup, Pryor represents a push to create the infrastructure necessary to win support among religious voters, who half of them just think they're religious. Pryor has ties to the Church of the Nazarene, a conservative evangelical denomination whose members include the Focus on the Family founder, James Dobson. He knows. Pryor's undergraduate degree is from Southern Nazarene University. and she is taught at Point Loma Nazarene University in San Diego. That was only a few miles from where Tommy used to live. And Bethany Nazarene College in Oklahoma City. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Here, this brings back memories. In 1995, Republican Representative J.C. Watts of Oklahoma hired Pryor as his press secretary and later promoted her as chief of staff. Of course, he's J.C. Watts is black. His father ran a church there in Oklahoma that we had some contact with because Johnny Lee Clary, who is dead now, he was a whacked out guy who was Klan, and then he became a whacked out Christian, and then he went around the country and around the world putting down the Klan. He claimed he burned down J.C. Watts' father's church. He used that all the time when he was speaking to Christian groups, but there's no record at all of J.C. Watts' father's church burning down. And I used to ask, well, how come if he's admitting burning down a church, why is not the FBI grabbing him? Well, I don't know. So here's a guy that became congressman because his daddy was a preacher, and he was pretty well-known preacher. And so the kid becomes a preacher and plays basketball or something, nigger ball, and he becomes a congressman. It's such a ridiculous, it's no wonder this country is going to hell in a handbag. We're being led by basketball and football stars and people like that. Yeah. Can you throw a basketball all the way down to the end and get to in that hole down there? Yeah, man, I can do that. Well, you're going to be in Congress then. J.C. Watts played the Republican side of the fence because there was a time when it was good business to come on as a black Republican because they would pull you into the church and give you everything in the everything you ever wanted if you're black and became a Republican. He called these black Democrats race-hustling poverty pimps. Which, of course, is true, but so is he. Working under Watts, earned Pryor, the gal that's going to go to work for Trump, recognition inside the Beltway, and in 2001 she was named one of the 100th most powerful women in D.C. by Washingtonian Magazine. Now, that's just because she was a Bible-beating Jesus freak. Other than football, basketball, let's see what else. You got to be a Jesus freak. You can become a powerful person in this world. You can have all the money you want. Well, boys and girls, don't worry about it. Help is on the way. Yeah, the forces of the light are coming. Benjamin Cream explains that UFOs and the people in them are engaged in a spiritual mission to help humanity to save this planet from further destruction. Malatya and his group work tirelessly with the Space Brothers to restore sanity to the Earth. I don't think we ever had sanity. Our Space Brothers are responsible not only for crop circles, but also for preparing the way for a new technology of light that will give us unlimited power from the sun. When we banish war forever, that technology will be ours. Maitreya will explain that we have a choice, continuing on our divisive path towards destruction, or sharing the world's resources more equitably and creating an era of cooperation, justice, and peace. Don't hold your breath, brother. With the help of the gathering forces of light, Maitreya, his group of enlightened teachers, and the Space Brothers, humanity is on the verge of a brilliant new civilization. So stand by, they're coming, man. Well, I just can't figure out what the hell's going on up there in Milwaukee. After violent riots, Milwaukeeans in the blighted inner city, that's the Negro city, are searching for their own way out of despair, saying they cannot rely on the government. Led economic development projects to remedy chronic crime and unemployment. They're looking for the solution. Well, the solution is to get all the black people together, put them on a train, and ship them out of Milwaukee. And then these areas where they have their ghettos would be developed into nice neighborhoods. Two nights of rioting erupted after Sylville Smith, 23, was shot and killed on Saturday, August 20th, by a police officer who said Smith refused to drop his gun. There's nothing stupider than, besides reviving a national conversation about race, inequality, and the use of deadly force by the cops, the riots called attention to Milwaukee as one of the most racially segregated cities in the United States. It has to be. The white people have to segregate. Oh, man. What would these people propose a cop do when a guy's standing in the middle of the street with a gun pointed at you? Well, no, let him shoot the cop. That's what they want him to do. Give your life for a Negro. Anyhow, those Milwaukeeans are trying to figure out what the hell the problem is. Well, the problem's right in front of you. It's the Negro. It's mostly the Negro himself. And you're not going to cure stupid. That goes for stupid white liberals, too. Well, the other night, my gal and I went out for a little pizza pie and a little couple of beers. I had a couple of scotches. And this place we go, it's a fun place, all white. Hardly ever see anybody that's not white in there. But on the wall up high, they got all these big screen TVs, sort of like a sports bar. And they had them all turned to the Olympics. And all I saw was, I couldn't keep my eyes off of it. Well, I tried to. Niggers all night on those. That sports stuff. Niggers here, nigger on that wall, nigger this wall, nigger runner, nigger swimmer, nigger. I'm telling you, it drove me crazy. Everywhere you looked, there was niggers. And so even though it was an all-white place, the television afforded us a 360-degree view of niggers. And, you know, that's why they kept the Russians out. It wasn't a dope. They didn't want any more white people in the Olympics. Yeah, that's why they want to keep the Russians out, because their people were almost all white as far as I know, and they whipped the asses off a lot of these Negroes. So I don't think I'll go to that place when they have the Olympics. It's bad enough just to have one TV running with blacks all over it, nigger ball. I just got a page from the Washington Post that comes in here every day. They say, who's going to police the Baltimore police? And I answered them and put a message out there. Who's going to police the Washington Post? Sounds like a better idea. Well, look at this. A senior staff member at Italy's first Islamic university, and it won't be the last, I'll guarantee you, recently called for a new final solution for a Zionist. The UK's Jewish Chronicle reported on Sunday. According to the report, Raphael Villani, who works in the public relations department of the Islamic University in southern Italian city of Lecce, wrote in a Facebook post earlier this month that there needs to be a final solution for Zionists, and the real Jews are victims of Zionism. Well, if you study history enough, you'll find out that's probably true. Yeah, that. In fact, the whole 6 million thing, alleged 6 million thing, is an outgrowth of this struggle between the Zionist Jews and the Orthodox Jews and a lot of other Jews. They kill each other. Well, British Jewish star Daniel Radcliffe hopes new movie about neo-Nazis will spark dialogue to defeat anti-Jewish rhetoric. Racist and anti-Semitic rhetoric supported by white supremacists can be defeated by opening channels for meaningful dialogue, British Jewish actor Daniel Radcliffe said, ahead of the release of his new film in which he plays an undercover FBI agent infiltrating a neo-Nazi group. White supremacist ideologies have more power the less we talk about them. Oh, good. Well, talk about me. So hopefully this does start a kind of conversation which would be a tiny part of a much larger conversation that needs to happen. That's interesting. Oops, well, I lost the rest of that article. I don't know what the hell happened to it, but it's a movie about an FBI agent that infiltrates the neo-Nazis and gives them a bad time. It's coming out over in England, I guess. And they ask, can the Lutheran Church in America shun its anti-Semitic or anti-Jewish roots? The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America recently and overwhelmingly approved a resolution calling on the U.S. government to end all aid to Israel and enable the independent Palestinian state. How about that? They're calling for divestment from Israel, too. There you go. Well, ISIS just released a new terror video to inspire the next generation of jihadists. The organization wants more lone wolf attacks on targets in the West. Self-radicalized jihadists are urged to use household tools in attacks. Well, there you go. They're going to sell out of nail guns pretty soon. The new video features locations in the United States, France, and Italy. So watch out for those carpenters, man, coming down the street. They may be jihadist, man. They may be ISIS. So run for your lives. The carpenters are coming. Well, I just sent an article along to you out of the Jewish media. It says gene therapy offers hope for fatal Jewish diseases. But how soon? Wait a minute. I thought we was all equal, man. What are these Jews getting these diseases that other people are not getting, you know? There's several that they get. So anyhow, ask yourself that. Does it have anything to do with the difference in genetics? What do you think? Well, the Jews are so mixed up racially with all kinds of other races and everything else that it's no wonder they don't carry a lot of freaky diseases. Well, let's see what the war hawks are up to again over there in Syria and the Middle East.
The United States hawks advance a war agenda in Syria. August 21, 2016. Exclusive. The United States government, having illegally sent American troops into Syria, is now threatening to attack the Syrian military if it endangers those troops, an Orwellian twist that marks a dangerous escalation, explains Daniel Lazare. By Daniel Lazare. War, like politics, is filled with surprises. While the focus in Syria has been on AUS-backed rebel offensive in Aleppo that has succeeded in turning tables on Bashar al-Assad's government, a new and unexpected flashpoint has developed 200-plus miles to the east where the United States jets are engaged in a dangerous showdown with Syrian warplanes near the city of Hasaka. The trouble began on Wednesday when, according to the UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, Kurdish forces advanced on the pro-government National Defense Forces that controls portions of the city. When the NDF responded with arrests, the fighting took off. This is not the first time that Kurdish and government forces have clashed in Hasaka, which is divided among Kurds, Arabs, Aramaic-speaking Assyrians, and a small number of Armenians. But what makes the latest confrontation so serious is that the United States quickly upped ante by scrambling two F-22 fighters to intercept a pair of Syrian Su-24s bombing Kurdish positions. NBC News reported that the jets came within a mile of one another on Thursday and were in visual contact before the Syrian aircraft left the scene. The United States jets chased away two more Su-24s the next day as well. Noting that the Kurdish units are part of a U.S.-backed coalition known as the Syrian Democratic Forces and that the United States Special Operations Forces were in the area at the time, Pentagon spokesman Jeff Davis, a Navy captain, said that the United States was resolved to protect the safety of both. "We view instances that place coalition personnel at risk with the utmost seriousness," he declared, "and we do have the inherent right of self-defense when the United States forces are at risk. As we've said in the past," he added, "the Syrian regime would be well advised not to interfere with coalition forces or our partners." Such statements are little less than Orwellian, since the United States has essentially invaded Syria by inserting military forces without Syrian government permission in violation of international law. What Davis was saying, therefore, is that the United States will prevent Syria from protecting its own forces on its own soil, which was rather like the Wehrmacht condemning Poland for daring to defend its own territory in September 1939. A pro-war establishment. The upshot is the latest example of how Washington's vast pro-war foreign policy establishment continues to get its way despite President Barack Obama's efforts to limit military involvement in the Middle East. Establishment of a no-fly zone in northern Syria has long been a neocon priority. Indeed, Hillary Clinton, a neocon favorite at this point, reiterated her call for a no-fly zone as recently as April during a televised debate with Bernie Sanders. Obama has opposed a no-fly zone because it would draw the United States into a direct conflict with the Assad government and likely its Russian and Iranian backers as well. But now with the United States promising to continue patrolling the skies over Hasaka, he finds himself backing into a no-fly zone regardless. The confrontation begs the question of who is really calling the shots with regard to Syria: the president, or well-placed hawks whose specialty is maneuvering the White House into doing their bidding. It also raises the question of the role of the Clinton presidential campaign. The White House is obviously coordinating closely with Clinton's campaign headquarters, and with prospects of a landslide victory that will give Democrats control of both houses of Congress plus the presidency, the stakes couldn't be higher. But since a quick and easy victory over Assad and his Russian and Iranian allies would vindicate the neocon position, the issue is whether pro-Hillary forces are pulling strings to make events in Syria go her way as well. This is not conspiracy mongering but simply the way policy in Washington is made. Hawks and doves are constantly jockeying for advantage with Obama standing haplessly in the middle. Moreover, the hawks seem to be winning since the United States foreign policy has turned distinctly more robust since the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia in late July. Around a time that retired four-star Marine General John Allen was warning America's enemies, "You will fear us," and Gold Star parent Isra Khan was telling Trump to go home and read the Constitution, Obama gave Ashton Carter, his interventionist Secretary of Defense, the go-ahead to bomb ISIS positions in Libya. On July 31, 3 days after Clinton gave her acceptance speech, Syrian rebels led by al-Nusra, the local al-Qaeda affiliate, launched its powerful offensive in Aleppo. Whether or not Washington okayed the offensive, citing reports of massive arms shipments to the rebels, the well-informed Moon of Alabama website argues persuasively that it did. There is no doubt that it encouraged and helped coordinate a powerful propaganda campaign that has followed in its wake. Omran Dokhnish, the dazed and dirt-encrusted five-year-old boy who has become a symbol of Aleppo's suffering, according to the New York Times, is one example of how the campaign has borne fruit. Lena Sergi Adder's powerful August 13th Times opinion piece, "Watching My Beloved Aleppo Rip Itself Apart," was another. While the rabidly anti-Assad guardian has hardly let a day go by without running a heart-rending tale about this or that horror that Bashar al-Assad and Vladimir Putin have visited on Syria's civilian population. Examples here, here, and here. The United States media on the bandwagon. Context, balance, and plain accuracy have fallen by the wayside as various media outlets hop on the pro-war bandwagon. Why, for example, focus on one the fate of one child in rebel-held eastern Aleppo when the UK-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, the mainstream media's favorite go-to source for Syrian casualty figures, reports that virtually the same number of civilians have died from random rebel shelling of government-held western Aleppo as from Syrian or Russian aerial bombardment in the east. That is 163 versus 162. U.S. back Syrian moderate rebels smile as they prepare to behead a 12-year-old boy, left, whose severed head is held aloft triumphantly in a later part of the video. Screenshot from the YouTube video. U.S. back Syrian moderate rebels smile as they prepare to behead a 12-year-old boy, left, whose severed head is held aloft triumphantly in a later part of the video. Screenshot from the YouTube video. While trumpeting the fate of Omran Dokhnish, who was shaken but apparently not seriously hurt, why has the New York Times failed to report the plight of 12-year-old Abdullah Issa, whose throat was slit last month by members of a U.S.-backed rebel force known as Harakat Nour al-Din al-Zinki because he had allegedly fought on the government side? We are even worse than ISIS, the fighters bragged before finishing the boy off. Yet even though the entire gruesome image was caught on video, the paper of record has refused to report a single word. The same goes for Lena Sergi Adder's stirring Times op-ed. Although it invokes the infamous 2013 Quaic River massacre to describe the suffering that Assad has heaped upon the people of Aleppo, it fails to mention that the slaughter was most likely the work of al-Nusra. Why spoil a good story with the facts? Much the same can be said for Hasaka, where the Wall Street Journal blandly reported that Syrian government bombers had been striking Kurdish positions near the city of Hasaka, where the United States has been backing Kurdish forces in the fight against Islamic State, also known as ISIS, ISIL, and Daesh. Since the United States is battling the Islamic State, the quintessence of evil, its role must be above reproach while the Syrian government is plainly up to no good. Nonetheless, the questions continue to multiply. If the United States military personnel are helping the Kurds battle ISIS, why are the Kurds fighting with pro-government forces instead? Since the Syrian Observatory says they started the fight, did the Americans do anything to restrain them or call them off? Or did they encourage them to attack in order to provoke a wider conflict? What, moreover, happens if the United States ends up downing a Syrian plane? Clinton will cheer. But what happens if Russia decides to join in the fray? Making Clinton happy. A happy romp in the skies over Hasaka would serve the Clinton campaign well. It would show that toughness pays, as Clinton has repeatedly argued. But the trouble with war is that it is rarely goes according to plan. Indeed, the Syrian conflict grows more complicated by the day. Syria and Russia are battling ISIS, al-Nusra, and other Islamist groups, while the United States is battling ISIS as well, while indirectly aiding al-Nusra by channeling arms to allied Islamist groups with which it shares weaponry and coordinates battlefield tactics. The United States has so far steered clear of conflict with Assad, although Hasaka may signal a change of heart. Turkey's megalomaniacal president Recep Tayyip Erdogan, meanwhile, opposes ISIS but supports al-Nusra outright. It should not be considered as a terrorist organization since it opposes Islamic State, he declared in a recent interview, but reserves his real enmity for the America's Kurdish allies. The Kurdish People's Protection Units, YPG, are battling Assad in Hasaka but at the same time fighting alongside Assad's forces against U.S.-backed rebels in Aleppo. China has declared its support for Assad and has even sent military advisors to help his regime in its fight with the rebels, thereby introducing yet another explosive element into the mix. This is more intervention than one small country can handle, and tripwires are therefore multiplying. Obama's aggressive actions in Hasaka may help Clinton against Trump, but they could all too easily blow up in the administration's face. War, indeed, packs just as many surprises as politics. Daniel Lazare is the author of several books, including The Frozen Republic, How the Constitution is Paralyzing Democracy, Harcourt Brace.
Well, there's your latest report on the Middle East and Syria, and how why Hillary is terribly dangerous. This broad is a nut, and Trump probably is too. But I think that if Hillary gets in there, we're going to have a hell of a lot more war and a hell of a lot more Americans get killed. But, I don't know, maybe worse is better, huh? Well, poor old Chicago, they just can't get a break. New research led by the RAND Corporation criminologist Jessica Saunders has concluded that a Chicago experiment in predictive policing was, at least in its early stages, a failure. The program, launched in 2013, used data analytics to identify individuals known as strategic subjects likely to be involved in a shooting. The original premise was that the social workers would engage with these at-risk individuals before they became embroiled in violence. I love these eggheads. Instead, the report finds that the list only served to help target those individuals for arrest after a crime had already been committed. Well, isn't that what most policing is all about? Wait a minute. Make it a little more than what one commentator called a data-driven most wanted list. Saunders and her co-authors found that identified strategic subjects, in other words, identified Negroes, were no more or less likely to be a victim of violence than other individuals. They were, however, more likely to be arrested for gun violence. The researchers further found that the program had no effect on Chicago's broader crime patterns. We can't figure out this damn crime around here. I know a lot of blacks involved, but that don't mean nothing. Speaking with The Verge, one of the report's authors, John S. Hollywood, that's interesting, suggested that the program's failure had more to do with the implementation problems than with the flaws in the idea of predictive policing. Amidst a number of other anti-crime initiatives, Hollywood says the Strategic Subjects Program just got lost until, that is, police needed to locate subjects. that isn't far from dystopian worst-case scenario sketched way back in 1956 by Philip K. Dick, quote, "The Minority Report," unquote, adapted into a Tom Cruise film in 2002. In that story, pre-crime investigations lead to the arrest of suspects before they've even broken the law. That's the one they're going to use on us. In response to the RAND filings, the Chicago police have stressed that the results were based on an early version of the program, which has since evolved greatly. And most of the failures were in implementation of a new method, which little evaluation so far of the accuracy of the predictive model itself. Oh, okay. The CPD also stressed that the program made no use of race or... made no use of race or socioeconomic data for identifying strategic subjects. Well, how in the fuck can it work if you don't use race involved? See, the best laid planned and the best programs in the world are not going to work if you take the vital points out of the program. That's a vital point, since the program so obviously raises concerns that it would simply reinforce what the task force has described as systemic and sanctioned pattern of bias and abuse by the department. In other words, those black boys are okay. They're just being picked on. Well, there you go, in Chicago. Stupid egghead people. They're not going to consider race involved in predictive, even in an all-black community. They're not going to consider race. Trump can ride a bicycle backwards. There was a governor of Georgia that could do that. I remember Duke talking about it. Donald Trump's support for forced deportation for undocumented invader immigrant mestizos is now unclear, his campaign manager said on Sunday. Quote, "To be determined," Kellyanne Conway, the Republican nominee's new campaign manager, told CNN's Dana Bash on the State of the Union after repeating the questioning over Trump's position on the matter. Oh, yeah. Do you still believe in deporting at wetbacks? Donald? Well, I don't know. I've been thinking about it. A central point of Trump's presidential campaign has been support for forced deportation of invader immigrants, wetbacks, mestizos, and from all over the world, and blocking immigrants from entering the U.S. on Saturday. However, Trump signaled that he is interested in finding a humane and efficient way to deal with undocumented invader immigrants during a meeting with his Hispanic, that should be Mestizo Advisory Council, because 99% or 95% of the Latins in this country are not Hispanic. Get that straight, boys and girls. Conway disputed reports of Trump appearing to back off his hardline position on immigration. Well, he's also picked up in his pro-hardline position on pushing blacks and supporting blacks and recruiting blacks. I'm the best guy you ever met. Reminds me of some of the shit Wallace pulled. Gee, I wonder what the Ku Klux Klan thinks about that.
At Kyocera, we...
I thought we were going to have some Trump commentary on why he loves the mestizos now and how he's going to make it wonderful for black people in this country, but it didn't come on. Incidentally, that Tom Cruise movie I talked about there briefly, it was a loser. The movie was a loser, too. Not only because they didn't include the black factor, the Negro factor. which brings up the question, how do you, can you talk about violence and crime without talking about Negroes? Oh no, naughty boy. Baltimore ends contract with a lawyer accused of neo-Nazi ties. The city of Baltimore terminated its contract with the lawyer Thursday after a published report said he supported neo-Nazi groups. Oh, terrible. The sky is falling. Glenn Keith Allen worked on complex litigation for the city's law department. The Baltimore Sun reported his contract was revoked after the Southern Poverty Law Center and Morris Sleaze Dees published a report saying he'd been a dues-paying member of the National Alliance. That don't, what does that mean? There are a lot of people that didn't do shit that were dues-paying members of the National Alliance, and the National Alliance is not around anymore anyhow. The National Alliance says on its website that its members are required to be white. Well, that's logical. Not have a non-white spouse or dependent and not be Jewish. Well, LGBT people are not allowed to join. Well, that's the way it goes. We believe that our people must be united by a common goal of building a better race, the website says. I didn't even know the National Alliance was still around. The SPLC also said Allen bought a ticket to attend a Holocaust denial conference. Oh, my God. Allen did not immediately respond to a phone message seeking comment. You see, this is why I've told people for decades, if you're in a power position, you stay totally secret, quiet, burrow in, you stupid idiot. You had a great job, you were in a position to do some good for the struggle, and you blew it. If you've got a good career going, don't sign up for the Dukes or the Aryan Nations or anybody else. National Alliance, you're a lone wolf and you're behind the scenes. You're completely private. Otherwise, it's going to happen to you the same thing that happened to this guy. And a lawyer that's that stupid? Well, I think he deserves to lose his job, I guess. Of course, Morris Dees is such a... He's such a sweetheart, isn't he? He loves to get people to lose their jobs and lose their houses and everything else. Huh. And he's still walking around, too. It's amazing. Superman. Super Morris Dees. The New York Daily News on Wednesday quoted Allen as saying that he was drawn to the National Alliance after serving in the Army. Quote, I had some pretty awful experiences with black people there, unquote, he said. So he gave an interview with the New York Daily News? Jeez. Allen also said he had distanced himself from the group in the 80s and his crazy ideas did not affect his legal work. Wait a minute, he distanced himself from the group in the 1980s? He'd been separated from National Alliance way back from then. Allen began contract work with the Baltimore in February after retiring from a local firm, the office of Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake said in a statement. I'll bet you the mayor's black as the ace of spades. The Justice Department released a highly critical report last week saying that Baltimore police officers routinely discriminate against blacks. Whoa, man. Use excessive force and are not adequately disciplined for misconduct. Well, what's that got to do with the lawyer? He's not even in that department. He's not a cop, you idiots. Well, it's like the old witch hunts of the old days. And if you don't keep your beliefs private, secret, and your activities secret, I can't help you. Nobody else can help you. Even pretend you're something you're not to stay out of the limelight. They want left-wingers, be left-winger. And chuckle about it when you go home. That attorney could have done a lot of good passing along information that could help the struggle, the white struggle, the white separatist struggle. But he threw it all away. That's the right wing. This is the right wing. These are unfortunately neocon white separatists. They gather around National Alliance, they gather around Duke, they gather around several other guys, and these guys feed them stuff. And they're not taught to be soldiers, to be real soldiers. They're not taught intelligence operations. They're not taught about anything like that. They're just supposed to be, I'm proud I'm a white man, and I don't think I should be persecuted because I'm proud I'm a white man. You're fired, asshole! The ones that really are screwed up are the ones that are cops and join the KKK or National Alliance or some group. Joining any group is suicide now. Stay out of groups, for Christ's sake. Don't join anything. Bet you all these neocon racists will invite this guy to their big get-togethers, their money-raising get-togethers, like Duke and these guys, and Jared Taylor and all these guys, to tell his sad story about how they picked on him, how Morris Deese picked on him, and he lost his job. Yeah, and they'll all cry crocodile tears and put their arms around his shoulders and say, well, brother, we feel bad about it, but we can't do anything about it. Got to the point where I hate the right wing as much as the left. In fact, in some cases, more.
Stephanie Rawlings Blake on Thursday immediately terminated the contract of a contractual city lawyer who had been working defending the police department from allegations of misconduct. This came because the Southern Poverty Law Center had alleged this contractual employee had neo-Nazi ties. Obviously, this was very concerning to city officials, considering the recent findings of the Department of Justice that Baltimore police were engaged in basically racially biased policing in the streets of Baltimore. The employee here in question, or rather the contractual employee here in question, had a long career with DLA Piper, which is a major law firm, and city officials said they weren't in the habit of investigating one's beliefs or their political affiliations before making this contractual hire. That said, City Council President Jack Young was very upset by the news. He said he was angry about it, and he urged the city's law department to do closer vetting of future contractual employees. You can read more about this matter at Baltimore.
Well, there you go. Join up with these clown right-wingers, these neocon right-wingers, and see what happens to your job. You don't need to join these outfits. There's plenty of information on the internet, and there's plenty of books around, and you can operate very well, extremely well, exceedingly well as a lone wolf and stay out of these organizations. If you don't, nothing I could do to help you. And especially you cops, you got to be out of your mind to join the KKK or some Nazi group. Number one, they don't get anything done anyhow. They just eat meat and retreat. So why risk your job, your career, your marriage, the love of your dog and everything else to do this, Christ? Go to these damn coffee clutches where these guys pump you up with a bunch of crap. You buy a bunch of books and go home.
Huh? Who asked about Clarence Thomas? Oh, Clarence Thomas was the nigger. He got a nigger's dream in America. He had a big dick, a white woman, and a lifetime job. You know what, though? I'm just up here bullshitting because it really ain't black and white. It really is not. Because you know why? White folks really love niggers. Don't let them fool you. Because you got to go back in the history because it's ownership. Because when white folks own niggers, we were in their house. You don't let nobody in your house you hate. We were in the guy, and the mammy, the babies are sucking on their titties, cooking their fucking food. It wasn't central heat. You know we was warming up the bed. Get your big black ass up in that bed. Warm it up. I'm going to sleep in 5 minutes. It's chilly in here. Now get in there, nigga, and warm it up. They loved us. As soon as we got free, that shit changed, didn't it? niggers live on this block, I don't think I want to live here. Now we can't even be on the same block. Trust me, if slavery came in tomorrow, niggers be, white folks be all open arms. Oh, welcome home, niggers. Missed you. Sing one of those songs, please. Here, Hammer, catch that chicken. Ah, that's too cold, ain't it? I don't mean to be that mean. Yes, I do.
This guy tells there's a lot of truth in this guy's comedy, and I'll tell you what. There's a hell of a lot of white people have this nigrophilia thing with blacks. Did you ever notice? Have you been in an all-white place? And I've seen it with lodges. Where one black will come in, all of a sudden they're all around him. They got their arms around his shoulder, and they just love that nigger. It happens all the time. You know that. I think most white people are bullshitting. They really have this thing about niggers. Yeah. Watch them. Watch the way they act. Of course, part of that's an act. They don't want people to think they're racist, so they overcompensate. They overcompensate. Yeah, places full of whites, a bar, in comes Rastus. Oh, my God, we love him. Rastus, we loves you. Can we buy you a drink, Rastus? That's it for today. I'll be back tomorrow on Tuesday. We'll see whether we can offend any more people. We try to offend. We're an equal opportunity offender. Get it straight. 14-5.